They had made a movie about us. The movie was based on a book written by someone we knew. The book was a simple thing about 4 weeks in the city we grew up in, and for the most part was an accurate portrayal. It was labeled fiction, but only a few details had been altered and our names weren't changed, and there was nothing in it that hadn't happened. For example, there actually had been a screening of a snuff film in that bedroom in Malibu on a January afternoon. And yes, I had walked out onto the deck overlooking the Pacific where the author tried to console me, assuring me that the screams of the children being tortured were faked. But he was smiling as he said this, and I had to turn away. Other examples. My girlfriend had in fact run over a coyote in the canyons below Mulholland, and a Christmas Eve dinner at Chasen's with my family that I had casually complained about to the author was faithfully rendered. And a 12-year-old girl really had been gang-raped. I was in that room in West Hollywood with the writer, who in the book noted just a vague reluctance on my part and failed to accurately describe how I had actually felt that night. The desire, the shock, how afraid I was of the writer. A blonde and isolated boy whom the girl I was dating had halfway fallen in love with. But the writer would never fully return her love because he was too lost in his own passivity to make the connection she needed from him. And so she had turned to me. But by then it was too late. And because the writer resented that she had turned to me, I became the handsome and dazed narrator, incapable of love or kindness. That's how I became the damaged party boy who wandered through the wreckage, blood streaming from his nose, asking questions that never required answers. That's how I became the boy who never understood how anything worked. That's how I became the boy who wouldn't save a friend. That's how I became the boy who couldn't love the girl. The scenes from the novel that hurt the most chronicled my relationship with Blair, especially in a scene near the novel's end when I broke it off with her on a restaurant patio overlooking Sunset Boulevard and where a billboard that read, "Disappear Here," kept distracting me. The author added that I was wearing sunglasses when I told Blair that I never loved her. I hadn't mentioned that painful afternoon to the author, but it appeared verbatim in the book, and that's when I stopped talking to Blair and couldn't listen to the Elvis Costello songs we knew by heart. "You Little Fool," "Man Out of Time," "Watch Your Step." And yes, she had given me a scarf at a Christmas party, and yes, she had danced over to me mouthing Culture Club's "Do You Really Want to Hurt Me?" And yes, she had called me a fox, and yes, she found out I had slept with a girl I picked up on a rainy night at the whiskey, and yes, the author had informed her of that. He wasn't, I realized when I read those scenes concerning Blair and myself, close to any of us. Except, of course, to Blair, and really not even to her. He was simply someone who floated through our lives and didn't seem to care how flatly he perceived everyone or that he shared our secret failures with the world, showcasing the youthful indifference, the gleaming nihilism, glamorizing the horror of it all. But there was no point in being angry with him. When the book was published in the spring of 1985, the author had already left Los Angeles. In 1982, he attended the same small college in New Hampshire that I tried to disappear into, and where we had little or no contact. There's a chapter in his second novel, which takes place at Camden, where he parodies Clay. Just another gesture, another cruel reminder of how he felt about me. Careless and not particularly biting, it was easier to shrug off than anything in the first book, which depicted me as an inarticulate zombie confused by the irony of Randy Newman's "I Love L.A." Because of his presence, I stayed at Camden only 1 year and then transferred to Brown in 1983, though in the second novel, I'm still in New Hampshire during the fall term of 1985. I told myself it shouldn't bother me, but the success of the first book hovered within my sight lines for an uncomfortably long time. This partly had to do with my wanting to become a writer as well, and that I had wanted to write that first novel the author had written after I finished reading it. It was my life and he had hijacked it. But I quickly had to accept that I didn't have the talent or the drive. I didn't have the patience. I just wanted to be able to do it. I made a few lame, slashing attempts and realized after graduating from Brown in 1986 that it was never going to happen. The only person who expressed any embarrassment or disdain about the novel was Julian Wells. Blair was still in love with the author and didn't care, nor did much of the supporting cast. But Julian did so in a gleefully arrogant manner that verged on excitement, even though the author had exposed not only Julian's heroin addiction, but also the fact that he was basically a hustler in debt to a drug dealer, Finn Delaney, and pimped out to men visiting from Manhattan or Chicago or San Francisco in the hotels that line Sunset from Beverly Hills to Silver Lake. Julian, wasted and self-pitying, had told the author everything. And there was something about the book being widely read and co-starring Julian that seemed to give Julian some kind of focus that bordered on hope. And I think he was secretly pleased with it because Julian had no shame. He only pretended that he did. And Julian was even more excited when the movie version opened in the fall of 1987, just 2 years after the novel was published.